Greetings and salutations, dear venturers. Welcome to episode 24 of Venture Maidens. First and foremost, we want to highlight our Patreon. With the conclusion of our short Gilded Shadows campaign, a podcast version of those episodes are dropping bi-weekly to our Patreon feed. To get access to this Powered by the Apocalypse campaign, along with three other full campaigns to enjoy, you simply need to pledge a single dollar per month. We wouldn't be where we are without the amazing generosity of our Patreon supporters, so a huge thank you to everyone who's donated to our production. A thank you, of course, to Emily Mayo for our badass theme song, and a thank you to Tabletop Audio for providing additional ambient music. I also bring good news! The final version of the Venture Maidens campaign guide digital PDF is now out. If you backed us on Kickstarter, then be sure to check your email from BackerKit in order to download your delicious new PDF. For those who might have missed out, the PDF will be available for purchase within a few games on the 2C Gaming website, so head to the link in the show notes to purchase yours. Alright, now for that sweet, sweet recap. Last time on Venture Maidens, our maidens stepped through a book into Penny's world and found themselves cast as characters in an altogether different kind of story. Aoife, Tony, and Lou were transported into bodies of three monster hunters defending a church from a zombie attack. Amidst a gruesome fight, our three heroes discovered their new bodies were even more complicated due to the ferocious monsters concealed within them. Pushing past the strange circumstances, they emerged victorious from the fight and were tasked by a holy sister to deliver a precious relic to a nearby town of Tailmore. And that's what happened. Alright, friends, adventure awaits!
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. Deeper into darkness now. No way but forward to plow. Following chants of fever pitch, demanding cries to burn the witch. Keep an eye on your neighbors as we head into favor. Episode 24, Our Town.
Are now live. Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's another episode of Venture Maidens, episode 24. This is a D&D 5th edition actual play podcast set in the homebrew world of the Plains. We had some hot and heavy action last time, so I'm just so excited to get in, to dive in. It got a little creepy, it got a little supernatural last time, so I don't know if you all are feeling it, but I feel like there's a ghost sitting on my shoulder just telling me to go for it.
It's me.
Or maybe, yeah, it's Lou. She's here right now on my shoulder. Before we dive in, I want to say this is a very adult-themed stream. You can expect some dark themes, especially in this little episode arc world we're in. Content warnings for this episode are the same as last time. So that is psychological horror, body horror, and fantasy, like references or versions of real world religions, specifically like Catholicism and Christianity. So if those are themes that make you uncomfortable or you're not up to handling this evening, this may not be the podcast episode for you to listen to. But with that, let's dive in. Hey, everybody, my name is Celeste Conowich, and tonight I will be your Dungeon Master.
Hello, I'm Katie, and I'm going to be playing Luvary Seth, your Drow Rogue.
Hello, I'm Nassim, and I'm playing your blood-sucking fighter, half-orc fighter, Tony Silvertail.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And
channel Vincent Price. And I am Sage, and I will be your buxom bard, Aoife Flannery.
Oh, yeah, I think I got a little sexy last time. A little sexy. I liked it. Good. So are we ready to jump back into some supernatural action?
Ooh, yeah.
Cool. So yeah, that is where we are picking up. You had found yourself reading Alice in Wonderland and then all of a sudden transported right into the body of these monster hunters in the middle of a zombie attack. And clearly the world you have been transported into is very different from the one you were in. Apparently in this world, everyone is human. It's more of like a gothic horror setting here. And all of you had jumped into the bodies of these human monster hunters. And not only were they, well, they were mostly human, they all seemed to have some monstrous part of them that you all had been discovering over the course of this action. So as a quick summary, we have a new mechanic that is going on here. Basically, every time somebody wants to lean into the abilities or benefits of their monstrous powers, they can do so, and they earn a check in their monster tracker. If the tracker fills up too much, then they become monsters completely. The monstrous side takes over, and they will become villains for the remainder of their time in Penny's domain. But can act in accordance with your nature in a way that harms yourself and potentially erase those checks. So this is a balance between using your powers to do really cool stuff, especially because the villains in this world are larger than life and clearly above your punch level. But with those powers, you can level the playing field. Yeah. So as a reminder, those trackers, I have Lou. Currently, you have two checked out of three boxes. Is that right? Tony, you did the bad thing that set you back down to one, so you are at one of three, and then Aoife, you showed your powers off once towards the end of last time, so you are at one of three. All right, keep an eye on those trackers, everyone. So, at the very, very end of last time, you had gotten the remains of St. Oslo, that apparently in that box also, it contains something called the Litany. Is in this sealed, very decorative box. You had that letter from Sister Dorothea to the priest, who you know resides in the town of Talemore. And the priest's name is Hugo de la May. So you had left this church behind and are now on the long and muddy road to head towards Talemore. You had heard the sister had mentioned that this was only about like an hour or two walk. During this time, you can get the benefits of a long or short rest as you are heading into town. And for the moment, other than the crappy weather and coming to terms with the new things you can do and maybe things you've already done and potentially what you're capable of, those thoughts swimming through your head, you're safe. And before we see what happens next with our heroes, you all are pulled into a dream? A memory? It feels like both in a strange way. And you're back in that place you were last time, that warm and cozy study, wrapped in your blankets and pajamas, listening to this woman, this raven-haired woman, tell you this scary story befitting the weather. And as you're thrown back into this memory, the woman must have just said something, or maybe she ended the first chapter, because all of the children around you are buzzing, chattering with excitement as she is kind of readjusting her position and setting back down. And you see now she has like a mug of tea, like on a little side table that you hadn't noticed before. And she, you know, takes a sip and places it back down as you all are getting settled back into place. And she says, "So, how are you feeling about the story so far? Are you enjoying it?"
Aoife, by this point, has completely emerged from her blanket and is just, you know, completely with, like, her hands clasped together, with just looking up with complete adoration, is like, "Yes, more, more!"
Yeah, large child Tony is, like, leaning on top of Aoife with, like, her elbow, like, digging into her shoulder, hand into her head, like, "Yes, please, why'd you stop? Keep going!"
Lou is sitting down very prim and proper with one of the other kids' head in her lap that she had had to, like, calm down and, like, lull. And she's just like, "I think it's pretty good. I think maybe more romance would be cute."
Ugh.
She laughs. And she laughs and says, "Well, we'll see. Are you ready to start chapter two?" And there's like a chorus of yeses from around the room. And she, once again, puts the book on her lap, opens it up. There's that creak of the spine and that turn of a page, that sound. Once again, she taps a finger on the book and begins to read. "With the Litany of St. Oslo safely in tow, the monster hunters set off on their journey back to Talemore. But little did they realize that the growing situation facing the town had grown explosive overnight. Unless the hunters can uncover the truth, The lives of friends, both old and new, hang precariously in the balance. And we flash back into this gray world of, you know, where the rain is hitting your face and your boots are caked in mud of the past couple hours of travel, as you all see a little town in the distance kind of emerging from the fog, surrounded by forest on all sides. You can see the few tall buildings that are in the town of Tailmore tower up, the tallest one being the steeple of course, the church towards the center of town. So you see that black cross, you know, against the gray, perpetually gray sky. And as you walk into town, there aren't really people on the periphery, though there weren't too many people last time you were here. The thought occurs to you. You're not sure where that came from. But as you move in closer towards the center of the town, towards the church, you can see that there are a great deal of people working at building something in the center of the square. You can see that they're piling up wood and hay and have put this large stake in the center of town. And you can see that there is a grim-faced woman kind of watching the proceedings as they construct this human-sized wooden stake in the center of town.
The sight of it makes me uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Giant stake. Whole thing. Awful. Yeah. That woman who's kind of watching everything, you see, she has like an official looking clipboard or something, and something. She's dressed very smartly. Something about her is familiar, and she definitely seems to carry some kind of rank or be important. What are you doing?
I think Aoife would immediately be drawn to, is there like a crowd that's sort of amassing around these hay bales as they're being brought together, or?
Yeah, so there are a few people. It's mostly like work people who are like hauling in this wood from everywhere. It looks like the town probably is just like cleaned out of firewood at this point, because people are throwing, you know, hauling broken shit in there, so like furniture and driftwood and stuff. And a few people are around in like tight clusters, kind of like gossiping and whispering. There's not like a large crowd, so maybe this has been going on for a while, or people are being discouraged not to like be in the way at this moment.
So seeing this woman who looks to have some sort of rank, Aoife would like to head up to her and will greet her with,
Hello, we're monster hunters in town, and we have a most important parcel for Bishop Hugo. Do you know where we find him?
Oh, Aoife, so your journey was a success, I assume? She looks at all of you as if she knows you.
Playing along with it. Yes, of course, we have the remains and litany and toe, and it got a bit hairy there, but we managed to make it back. What's been happening here? Things have seemed to take a darker turn, as she sort of narrows her eyes at the wood that's being amassed.
Yeah, and she lets out a sigh that's... There's a whole bunch of emotions going into that sigh. She looks at what's happening kind of sadly and turns back to you and says, Yes, my daughter is missing. And, well, we have the woman accused being held. And as you can see, she's scheduled to be burned tomorrow. So...
And so they're sure she's done it.
Well, and she, another expression crosses her face. Why don't you go ahead and give me an insight check to see if you can figure out what exactly is going on here.
Gladly. That is a dirty 20.
So clearly this woman is distressed. Obviously, if she said her daughter is missing, gone, there is that on the first, you know, a layer of that. But there's also a veneer of like, I'm a town official and I have to keep my shit together. And that is fighting with her. Like this official that maybe thinks things have gotten out of hand versus like something very bad has happened to me personally. And she's trying to be very professional and just like give you the facts, because that's all she can do right now in this moment. Well, when you arrived yesterday. Was it, God, was it only yesterday? It feels like an eternity. We knew that Gwen was, had been gone, but I assumed she would come back home, but she never came back in the night, and this morning she was still gone, and so was that girl, that Rook. And with her mother's history, there wasn't much we could do. The accusations have been stacking up against Lorelai for quite a long time.
Where is she being kept?
Lorelai? In the cellar underneath the church. We don't have any kind of prison proper, but now that you're back, perhaps all of you could look into this. If my daughter really is dead, I would very much appreciate even knowing where her body is. So, she's fighting with all her power. Yeah, not to cry. You can see.
Yeah, and Aoife will definitely like nod very solemnly and will almost reach out to make the gesture of a comforting touch, but pause just before and will say, "Well, you know where to find us, and when you need a chance to be a grieving mother, I know this is a lot to bear, but we'll get to the bottom of this. Don't you worry."
I appreciate that, and listen, Hugo is pushing very hard for this to happen, and she kind of throws her gaze at like the stake that's going on here, and a lot of people are very angry, but there's very little evidence at this point. If you can get to the bottom of this, maybe there's still a chance to set this right. She says and looks at you meaningfully.
And yeah, you full definitely throw glances at the others.
Just to summarize again, the players going on here. So Lorelai is the woman who apparently has a history, and the priest Hugo very much wants to burn at the stake. Lorelai is the mother of a daughter named Rook, who apparently Vittoria is, this is her woman, the woman you're talking to, Vittoria, the mayor of this town. Her daughter's name is Gwen. Gwen went missing, as did Rook, around the same time. And apparently both Lorelai and Rook have some kind of reputation. So it seems like, in general, people are suspicious that Lorelai is responsible for whatever happened, and Rook is probably an accomplice.
Is there anything y'all want to ask this lady?
Well, are we allowed to go and question your suspect?
Yes, of course. You all are more than capable than anyone here. I'm sure Lorelai has not exactly been forthcoming. She hasn't confirmed or denied accusations. But at this point, Gwen has been missing for a while, and Rook hasn't been seen in town for at least a couple of days.
And where would we find Hugo?
Oh, he's watching Lorelai. He's sort of taken it on himself to make sure she doesn't escape or spell her way out. Whatever the hell he thinks
okay
she might do.
Well, we'll definitely do what we can. Hopefully you'll have your daughter back soon. We're gonna do everything we can, obviously. I'm sure it's just a misunderstanding.
Well, with everything happening around here and the monsters and I just don't know. She says and rubs her eyes. And you can see she's probably only like 35, 40, but she looks aged by troubles and weariness, maybe even 10 years beyond her actual age. You notice just the wrinkles and the frown lines that have grown on her face.
All right. Well, I say we start with those two.
If you need anything, just let me know. And if Hugo gives you any trouble, you come find me.
Stay strong, stay positive. Giving up is not going to help anybody, especially Gwen. You'll see her soon, don't worry.
And her face kind of goes to a dour expression as she continues to watch the townspeople pile up the kindling for this stake in the center of town.
Ooh, we gotta hustle.
Whew, yeah, let's go.
You have a time limit, kids.
Oh, no, I do not want to attend this barbecue.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
To the church.
The church? Right off the main square. In fact, it has a view of this burning that is going to happen. Of course it does. It's the center meeting place in town, so of course it does. So yeah, the doors to the church, it's day, it's open. You can see a very modest church in front of you, significantly larger than that tiny, the Pendragon church that you were just in, but still quite quaint. It's that one large room. You can see there are a couple people seated at these wooden pews that seem to be attending to silent prayers. There are statues of figures all over the place. You would guess, in your knowledge, like they look like maybe heroes or like kind of like statues of gods, but they all appear to be normal people, which seems very weird to you all, given like the cultures you all come from. But yeah, there are candles lit throughout, and there doesn't seem to be any, there's no one giving like a sermon or service right now, but there are a couple people dressed in long robes that you would recognize. You're like, that's a cleric, probably, scurrying about.
All right.
Look for the one with the biggest hat.
The taller the hat, the closer to God.
Yeah, you don't see any big hats running around, but you see some of these people have these stoles that seem to be like shinier or have like more embroidery than others. So you find one of these people and it seems to be it's like a younger man, maybe like 28, 29, which is like ancient. It appears based on the people you've seen. Vittoria is probably the oldest person you've seen in this world at like approaching 40. Because boy, people don't seem to live long around here. And he turns to you and says, "Ah, blessings upon you. How can I help you today?"
"We're looking for Bishop Hugo. We've arrived with something most important."
"Yes, of course. Well, the bishop is attending to matters downstairs, but I recognize you all. Of course, I'll take you to see him. Tony, how you doing in this church?"
"Are we inside the church?"
"Seems like they've stepped kind of inside the atrium area. Did you want to hang back, or did you want to..."
"Oh, she's not happy, that's for fucking sure."
"I will say, this one feels worse because, like, the ground outside isn't all fucked up and, like, abandoned. This one is, like, has more of whatever that, like, scary energy is."
Mm-hmm.
"This one's got a lot more of it." Like a functioning, you know, clean, well-cared-for church with people in prayer.
Yeah, it like makes her skin crawl. She actually feels physically uncomfortable. Ooh, like yeah. There's bugs crawling under her skin. But she has to go on. She has to talk to these two.
So yeah, you can push through. So you move through. It's uncomfortable, but yeah, you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this guy is talking to you. "If you would like to see the bishop, please, you can come with me." And he starts to walk deeper into the church, which just Tony is like, I guess he's getting closer to the altars right on the, you know, the big fucking cross like hanging just above. And you see all these stained glass windows with crosses and like, it's everywhere.
Oh, God.
It's everywhere.
She's like hissing silently to herself at every cross.
Yeah. Like one of the people, you know, sitting in a pew kind of looks up at you startled and is like, "Huh." And gives you a weird wave as you walk by. Or like, "I'm sorry, did you? Oh, no, okay." Holds their book up. Yeah, so he leads you down off towards the back of the church. There are a couple of doors that lead off. And he exits one way and indicates there's a stairwell that you see travels down below. So it must be like the basement level set in the ground of the church. And he says, "The bishop is down there with the prisoner." Even he says uncomfortable as he says it. "If you don't mind, I do have duties to attend to, so you can help yourselves."
Yeah, motion off, head down those stairs.
Mm-hmm. As you do, and yeah, and like Tony, as you get like out of the main area proper, like step down, it feels a little, the pressure kind of goes down as you're like in the basement, like buried in the earth. It doesn't seem to be as uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you walk down the steps and you can see the room below is, it's a cellar. You know, there are like kegs of, you can see maybe wine or some other beverage. You all would have no idea what a church would be doing with a bunch of wine, but okay. And these big crates of something stored down there, as well as a few other odds and ends. And on one side, you see like a, it's like a cold storage, like heavy door that you can see. So like a cellar where they might keep cheeses or dairies or something. And it has been turned into a makeshift like cell. It's got like a heavy padlock on the door, and you can see like recent like blacksmiths have like reinforced it somehow. And hanging above the door is a horseshoe. And then you can also see that crosses have been carved into the frame of the door. And then you see large like laurels of garlic have been hung on either side of it. So it just looks like someone just kind of like splattered like all the supernatural, like whatever you can think of is just guarding this door. And sitting on a like a wooden chair by it, you see must be the bishop. He's got a very fancy hat and is wearing like these, you know, these long, very ornate robes compared to the others you've seen so far of white and gold. And as you approach, he stands up and he looks at you. Yeah, he's kind of like watery blue eyes and wrinkles in his face. Again, he looks remarkably old compared to everyone else. And he says, "Ah, you've returned. Good. And the bones, are they safe?"
"They are. But first and foremost, what's Lorelai been accused of? What evidence has been brought against her?"
Yes, I don't blame you for not picking up on her earlier. She is a crafty one. She has hidden herself amongst our community for many years. Not even I, with the Lord's might on my side, could have foreseen such an event," he says, and gives you like a nod of commiseration. "Finally, her witchcraft has gone too far. She has consorted with demons and orchestrated the murder of one of our beloved young people. It is quite a tragedy, but I'm just glad we stopped her before she could claim more victims. Or, well, who knows how many she's ensorcelled over the years." And you just see like the pure hate in his eyes as he describes this to you.
"You saw her talking to demons? Is firsthand?"
"She consorts with demons, devils, fiends, all manner of those things. That's clearly how she got her child. We've suspected for years, and there have been many rumors, but this is proof."
"I'm so confused. Like, where's the physical proof, though? If you're going to be burning a woman."
"Well, we searched her house and found many implements of her trade. I'm sure you would recognize them. Herbs and potions and spells, all things of that nature. Wands and athames, and they even had cats. They've always been strange on the edge of town, hiding their devilish deeds."
"Well, who's to say you won't bring even greater harm upon your own town by burning her, if she is a witch?"
And he like narrows his eyes at you and then glances at you all and stands up to his full height, which is not insignificant. It's like a flat 6 foot as he does so. "I have given you all great breadth and room to do your trade. Monster hunting is something we desperately need in this area, but do not mistake my lenience for kindness. I strongly suggest you do not question the will of God. It will end poorly for you. Now please, hand over what I hired you to get. I will give you my money, and perhaps it is best you leave town."
Aoife would like to lean into her abilities.
Oh, yeah?
Because, Faye do love striking bargains, mm-hmm. So.
It starts off very subtly, but just sort of beginning to suffuse through the air is this, like, faint smell of vanilla. And as she leans in, and wait, which one of you has the actual, the bones and the litany?
I assumed you did.
Okay. Yeah, she'll be carrying it in her bag, and she says, "Well, you did hire us to do it, but perhaps instead of payment in gold, we'll take payment of another kind. And should you expect our services again to be safe from the monsters that creep across this land, well, I would suggest you take this deal," she says very pointedly.
Mm.
"We'll give you the remains and the litany if you give us Lorelei. She's not to be burned. She's to live freely in her custody."
Mm-hmm. You're using your, you checking off a box to use your fey, mm-hmm. like, force him to.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. So we check that off, and
now we got two.
And you see, as he is listening to you, Tony and Lou, you'll see this guy's eyes, his pupils, like, dilate. They become huge as he seems to be, like, fixated on what Aoife is saying. And he goes very still, and he says, "That would be agreeable. The box." And he reaches out his hand to take it.
Aoife nods. Aoife takes a finger and wags it at him, and she says, "First, let her out," as she presents the box and holds it just out of his reach.
"I must not make myself available to the harm of witches." And he reaches down and, like, gives you a key. "I will take the box and go before you open the door." And you're, like, impressed that this dude even has, like, even that much to fight you. Like, this dude, he's got something. Maybe it's the hate. Maybe it's this faith in this god that everyone keeps talking about. But, like, something is giving him a little edge against you still.
Mm-hmm. She'll gesture to make that exchange, that simultaneous exchange for the key and for the box.
Yeah, and he does. And he catches it, and like a kid, you know, with a candy jar that they've just stolen, he, like, grasps around it, and he looks back at you all, and, like, a moment of confusion kind of passes over his face as he realizes what's going on, and then he, like, scurries out of the room. A way that reminds you very much of, like, a little rat as he heads up the stairs, holding with the box. And you are left alone with this key and the cell.
Undo that padlock.
And you do. And as you, the door, like, creaks open, and you have to, it's very sticky because of all this, like, recent metal that's been just, like, put all over the door. You see a small windowless cell on the other side. There's still, like, you know, the hooks of, like, drying meat and stores of salt in here. And huddled in one corner is the most miserable looking woman you have ever seen. She's covered in dirt. And there's, like, a bad smell in one corner where clearly she was not provided a bucket or a bathroom of any kind. So she just looks up at you, and you can see she's got, like, dark hair, dark features, and these, like, green eyes that, like, look up at you, you know, from the corner. And her face isn't of relief or anger or anything. It's really just, honestly, the face of someone who's just been through so much and is just so fucking tired. As she looks up at all of you and she says, "What do you want?"
"We're getting you out of here."
"Is that some kind of cruel joke? I don't get it."
"I've been told I'm not very funny, and I can agree. We're getting you out of here, and we're going to go find your daughter, Rook, too."
"And Gwen. We're going to put this right."
And she looks at you all like she's measuring you up and considering you. "Who are you?"
"Sam."
"I've never seen you in town."
As we stand in our monster hunting pose.
"We're the Venture Maidens."
She's like, "What the fuck does that mean? I've had the worst fucking day of my life." And you're just like, "What are you saying?"
No, it says, "Well,
we're a group of monsters hunters, and we're always looking to do the right thing, not the thing that's most popular. She sort of gives a knowing look. I've made a deal with the bishop that if we gave him what he hired us to get, that instead of gold, we'd get to take you free. And I know if you want your place in this town to be restored, or if you want to get out of here alive, find your daughter, find Gwen, not have an angry mob after you, I suggest you come with us. We've got you under our protection.
Basically, we believe in innocent until proven guilty, so we're trying to give you that chance to prove yourself. If you don't want to take it, we can leave you here.
And I don't think that you want that, because they are setting up quite the display for your exit from this world.
She listens to all of this, and she still hasn't had, like, a deeply emotional reaction to anything you've said. You get the sense that she's a very logical person. So she considers, and then she kind of gets out of her crumpled pose and leans her head back on the stone wall and closes her eyes and says, "So, by some manner, I can only assume magic, you've managed to convince the bishop that I should be freed. And you think that my freedom will somehow make this situation better when there's an entire town stacked against me. Wherever I go, whatever I do, if I don't have a life here in this town, there is nowhere I can go. And even more important, my daughter won't have anywhere to go. So listen to me very carefully. If they think that I am responsible for this and that my death will end things, I would much rather that happen and buy my daughter a life than leave now to do whatever it is you think I can do. I appreciate what you are doing here, if you do indeed believe I am innocent, but you all are much more capable of finding evidence to the contrary than I would be walking free. And all I would do is prove my guilt by walking out of this cell. Do you understand? It is not one person's judgment. It is the whole town, regardless of what the bishop says. He has sway over so many.
So you're saying there's nothing you can do to help us find your daughter and Gwen?
I can tell you what I know, but I honestly don't know. I don't know where my daughter is. She left hunting a couple of days ago. She brings back all of our food and cares for us, and that was the last I saw of her. And Gwen, I haven't seen her for days. So this was all news to me, as much as it was to you when they dragged me out of my bed in the middle of the night.
Where does your daughter usually go hunting?
Just in the woods around the area is lush with beasts, and though it is quite dangerous, especially with the monsters year after year growing in numbers, but she is one of the few who's been able to consistently go out there and bring food back. And in fact, she provides much of the game for this ungrateful little town.
Well, I mean, can't force you to come with us, but I will say you're still going to be better off with us than sitting here waiting for them to cut you off, because it's clearly not going to make things better. And once they've gotten rid of you, they're just going to find someone else to blame and burn at the stake and continue to do that. So it makes their small brains feel a little bit better for a short time. So I don't think you're doing anyone, even yourself or your daughter, any favors by staying here. You might do yourself a favor if you help us prove your innocence, but...
She looks up at you and says, "Do you have children?"
No.
When you live in a small town full of small-minded people, I think it's remarkable how limited you really are in a lot of things. I will do what I can to help you by telling you everything I know, but that is all I can do. So ask your questions, and if you really wish to help me, please find out what happened and get here with the truth. before they burn me tomorrow. But I will not leave this cell and make things worse for my daughter, no matter what you say to me.
Sounds like that's the end of our conversation then, if you've told us everything that you know already. I think we got some work to do.
Well, where does she like to hunt? Where should we go to start looking for her?
I mean, I don't... She fights with herself for a moment and looks back up again at the three of you. Can I trust you? I know it's a stupid thing to ask, but for some reason, I don't know. She looks up at you, yeah, with that question floating in the air. Can I trust you?
We're the only ones here trying to fight for you, so I think the answer is yes.
And in any case, there are people here who might not be brave enough to fight, but they know injustice when they see it. Friars upstairs and Victoria herself, whose own daughter is lost. She knows it wasn't you. And we believe in fighting for the truth. And you can take that as it is.
She sighs and says, what I'm about to tell you doesn't help my case. That's why I've not repeated it. In fact, it may even make things worse. I know my own daughter, and I don't think she's capable of harming anyone, but she and Gwen were friends, and my daughter has always been a little different. And I think Gwen was also a little different, and I know recently she's been around a lot more, and on several occasions she's talked to me about magic, she says in a hushed voice, and I think that Gwen might have the gift like I do.
Aoife will kind of like scrunch and sit down next to her and sort of like lean in to the whisper, almost sharing air between the two of them. And she says, I know what it's like also to be burdened with something that is at equal points a blessing and a curse. And what happens when the wrong people can find out about it? Do you think she was scared? Do you think she ran off? Do you think someone found out?
I don't know. I always warned her to be careful, to not talk to anyone. And I never told her about my gift. I've kept it hidden for so long, and yet somehow all these people unknowingly suspect, or maybe they just, their ignorance somehow figured it out. But I warned Gwen not to ever speak of it, and I did not encourage her questions. Well, if Gwen and she, Rook, were spending time together, then Gwen might have, like I said, Rook is different and she wouldn't harm anyone, but what she is, I mean, how can you deny that?
She'll lean in very pointedly and ask, what is Rook?
She's my daughter. When she was young, she was playing in the woods and she was bitten by something and she changes. And she never goes into town when it happens, and she stays far away, and... But I don't know if Gwen saw her or followed her. I don't know.
I'd like to think the best of a situation, the two of them being friends, that Gwen might have sought to use her gift to cure Rook, perhaps?
Maybe.
We'll find them.
Even if I don't make it, if you could just find Rook and make sure she's okay, it would mean the world to me.
She kind of swallows and nods and wipes a tear that swelled up in the corner of her eyes from her own face. She takes a sigh and she looks at Tony and Lou.
We'll do our best. Find her and we'll try to get back in time for you.
Thank you. God be with you. Please lock the door. Keep the key on the other side. I don't want to cause any more trouble.
Blue kind of backs up out of the room, heads up towards the stairs.
Yeah, same. Yeah, Aoife will head out. and we'll padlock the door again, but keeps the key.
Yeah.
It's on the other side after all.
So much fable shit from you.
It is a sealed, heavy room, so she can't hear you. If you do, you appear to be alone if you want to talk here. And she definitely cannot hear you through the heavy door. Well, I'm going to refill my wine to replenish my tears, my acting tears.
Oh, yeah. Some wine post wine.
God, Tony's just shaking her head like, God, I don't get that. Why would she choose to stay? I don't see how that's protecting anyone, but... it's just giving us more of a time crunch, I guess.
If everybody else in the town thinks that Rook is odd anyway, if anything strange continues, she's going to be next. It is a little silly to me, but she's made up her mind, and I guess her determination is admirable.
Well, and if anything else happens while she's locked away inside a cellar, it'd be hard to pin it on her.
I wouldn't be surprised. These church people can really, you know, put their minds to anything. If they have their faith, they'll believe in anything is possible.
I think he thinks that she consorted with demons to have a baby. I think that he just doesn't know what sex out of wedlock is. That was really alarming for me. What an absolute infant of a man. Well, we better get going.
While we have this moment, Aoife's gonna pop open that letter that was given to her by Dorothea.
Yeah. So you see, real quick, basically, this letter is a resignation. It's a pronouncement that she intends to leave the clergy. She feels like she has failed to protect the people around her, the people who needed help most, and the church has fallen, and... with all of the monsters and the influence and all of these chapels and churches losing their relics, and she was about to be one more, she doesn't feel worthy to serve God any longer.
Aoife will leave it, like, on the seat where the bishop was posted up outside of the door. Just tossed open.
Yeah. Nothing juicy, unfortunately. Just fucking sad. This world is just... cruel and sad. It feels like at every turn. This is Penny's world. This is Penny's demesne, by the way, or her dwelling, by the way. Like, that thought is, oof. Like, this is her home. She's made it this way. What the fuck? I think would be it.
Sister needs to read more romantic comedies, is what I'm thinking.
Tony can't, like, be in this church another goddamn second. So she's like, can we go? Can we please, like, yeah. Get on with it? She's going to start marching right out the door.
I'm ready.
And you can all kind of burst out of there. And as you do, you get a lot of curious looks from the people in the church and the employees. Because, I mean, minutes ago, they must have seen the bishop also scurrying out of here with the box and, like... apparently, he's been obsessively guarding this, like, woman. So, as you exit, you get a lot of curious looks. And Vittoria, also, as you walk out the steps, she's still out there at her post. And she turns and looks at you all and kind of cocks her head and, like, looks at you like, is everything okay?
No, this town is about to make a huge mistake. And it's going to continue to cause more problems for you all. But we're... gonna try and put a stop to it before it's too late.
She doesn't immediately, like, silence you or say no or anything. She, like, looks at you like the weight of a person's life is on her conscience and is, like, smashed by it, right? As she just looks at you and she says, I suggest you talk with the villagers and see if there's any leads you can find. People are scared and they need someone. They need something done to assuage their fear. And she looks at you with just a 1,000-mile stare. Talk to them, see if there's any evidence you can find. I pray that you will get to the bottom of this in time.
Things start up and there's anything that you can do to buy some time. I think from one concerned mother to another. Lorelai would appreciate assistance so that we can have a happy ending here.
I will do all I can, but patience is a virtue rarely found in such dark times, and my voice is small compared to the will of the many. I will do what I can. That is all I can promise.
Good luck to you. We'll go talk to some of these people and see what we can find out and try to instill some shred of hope in them.
Yeah. So, do you want to gather rumors, information? I will say you have a couple different avenues, I guess, of investigation. You've already talked to Lorelai. You can talk to the townspeople, see if... because apparently Lorelai has some kind of reputation, as well as Rook. And they must have something to believe that these events are connected. So talking to people in town might yield some stuff. There's also, Lorelai's house apparently was searched. I don't know, maybe there are clues there, so you could investigate the house. You've pretty much gotten everything you can from Lorelai, but maybe somebody else in town knows something. But otherwise, you don't have much to go on right now.
I think investigating the house would probably be what Lou is going to be best at.
I will stick with the townspeople and talk to them.
Both Tony and Aoife, if you need to whip it out, have some potential for some mind fuckery. So. Yep.
yes, that's what I've been contemplating.
Careful, young Aoife, you have 2 out of 3 marked. All right, whose scene do we want to do first? Do we want to see Lou investigating the house, or do we want to talk to townspeople?
Let's do a talk, and then a house, and then a talk.
Okay. All right, cool. So, Tony, Aoife, where are you all going? Are you going to different places? Are you sticking together? Where are you?
Tony, I feel like it makes sense to her to go to the people who are, like, most fired up about this stake, the burning, and see their point of view and be like, what is it that you are so convinced about? What has happened? So, yeah, she wants to go and find, like, the mob mentality people and talk to them.
So I think heading probably to the local tavern where a lot of these people are sitting around, and it is packed right now. And people are getting so fucking fired up about this. Like, from what you've heard or been, like, the pieces that are coming in, clearly this town is on the edge of disaster. Like, it's remote. There are forests on all sides. Apparently monsters have been just, like, taking out smaller villages and towns all around. So these people are scared and feeling powerless, which means that in a situation where they can seize some power, some people are really getting drunk on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the atmosphere you're walking into, a very frightening mob mentality. It's a good way to describe it. So when someone big and powerful walks into the room like you, a monster hunter too, people cheer at you, and they're like, yeah, we're doing a little monster hunting of our own, right? And they're like, somebody get this slayer a beer, you know, as they're all drinking. And so a bunch of, like, big sweaty people dudes, like, bring you over to their table, and they're like, ha, did you know she was a witch? Can you, like, sense it? Or was that just, like, bam, was it just us, like, we figured it out, you know? Like, what do you... Actually, you know what? Everyone quiet down. How can you tell someone's a witch? And they all, like, lean in to you. Come on, Slayer, tell us.
Well, there's many secrets to witches. She's playing into the thing. She's taking a swig. She's, like, welcoming in the crowd. There's many secrets to witches. They're some of the trickiest to find. So, I mean, I would want to say good on all of you. I don't know how you... How is it you seem to have found the secrets of your town witch? What is it? What is she? We've been away working, monster hunting our own. And we want to know exactly what you've done. You've done good work here. So tell us, how did you find out?
Yeah. You want to give me some kind of check to endear yourselves to these people? It's not going to be hard because you're already walking in a position of power. So I would say you can use, because I know charisma isn't your strong suit, and you're also kind of like a rough and tumble badass, so if you want to, yeah, what are you using? What is your force of personality here to, like, sell it to these people? You want to do, like, you want to, like, smash that table or do some, like, man, like, you know, like, oh, yeah, look, I picked up this heavy thing. I don't know.
Maybe an intimidation check. Like, she chugs the whole goddamn beer at one go and then slams it down onto the table. Yeah, it shatters upon impact.
Fuck yeah. Let's do it. Let's do an intimidation to, like, impress these people because they think you should be scary.
Yeah, what other great monster hunters are here among me who can put their... Show me their great work.
Whip it out. Let's measure.
15?
Yeah, that's great. This, like, group is like... And they kind of, like, hush up, you know, in that, like, excited fear. Like, oh, shit, the monster hunter is talking. And this big, burly guy leans in and says... You know what? It took us a while to figure it out, but through the years, you know, they've always been a little different, and, like, there's a general murmur around, and that there's always been stories, right? And now, finally, we all came together, I started putting all the stories together, it all started adding up, it all started making a lot of sense, you know? And then, when the girl went missing... Of course, right? And that demon daughter, just the cherry on top, you know? And he kind of, like, snaps back, and, like, a couple other guys come forward, and he's like, tell him what you saw. Tell him what you saw. And you start getting barraged with these stories. So it seems like a lot of people, apparently the cottage that they live in is kind of removed from town, so it's, like, more out into the forest, which is suspicious according to these people already, because it's so dangerous outside of the town. Like, who could live out there safely unless they had some kind of, like, magical protection is, like, something. So that's already weird that they're out there, they're other, and they're, like, not part of the town. And then they say that Lorelai isn't married, she's never been married, she hasn't been seen with anyone in the town or anything, and one day she had a baby. So, and they she's not married. They've never seen a man there around. They've asked everyone they know. Nobody claimed it, right? And she had a baby. So clearly it was a demon. Father is a big one. Animal noises have been heard several times, and screams from the village have been reported by people passing by or not through various times. On top of that, animal noises, strange music, sounds of other voices have been heard coming from the house, strange shadows in the area. Sometimes the grass around the house is a different color than it should be. You get a whole, like, range of these reports. On several occasions, she's put a curse on men who have displeased her, or even sometimes, like, some poor sad zaps have, like, tried to, you know, ask her on a date, or, like, you know, demand that they marry her so she'll be safe, and she cursed them. She doesn't go to church. So the tales keep going on and on. Not to mention, yeah, that her daughter is awful, because she also wears pants.
Mm.
And has a bow, like, and fights.
My... Clearly consorting with the devil. You guys have built quite the case.
Right?
Now, I'm wondering, have you ever...
We're just so glad we caught her, right?
Well, that's one thing. But you'd be surprised how good it can be to have someone with, you know, a certain kind of access, certain kind of abilities on your side, instead of turning them... against you? I mean, hey, if she's done harm, she's done harm, but imagine if you had a witch on your team, right?
And there is a violent negative reaction from several people. Like, the word witch, it's like if you had, like, said, you know, this is a murderer. Imagine having a serial murderer in your apartment building. How great would that be to keep all the other murderers out? Like, that's kind of what you're saying to these people.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
and they are not buying what you are selling. And there's like, you've earned a little bit of grace, but you can tell if you push even an inch more in that direction, they are probably going to put a second post up in the town square for you, is the impression you're getting.
Well, really trying not to use my second ability just yet. But I don't know. Any other questions, Aoife? Or are you not with me?
Yeah, no, she wouldn't be there. She's got ideas for what she's gonna be doing to collect rumors.
So let's leave Tony there. You've just gotten into a whole mess of trouble. So we'll come back to you, Tony. And right now, also, I will say you can't dominate a whole room. You get one person. So right now you've got like 50 sus villagers sitting there. Like, I'm sorry, what did she say? That we should work with witches? What? And people suddenly start noticing also, like, hey, you are a woman wearing pants, like, as this is, you know. So things are cranking up for you. So, Lou, let's jump to you. So this house on the edge of town. So you want to go investigate the cottage where Lorelei and Rook live?
Yep, I want to investigate the cottage and see also if I could kind of find out what direction Rook and Gwen might have gotten off to.
For sure. All right. What do you want to start with?
I'm going to go ahead and just start inside the house and kind of go through things to see if, I don't know, maybe there's like any correspondence between Rook and Gwen since they were so close or anything that can give us any kind of hint tucked away. Just things like that.
The house itself is probably a good like 15-minute walk outside of town. It's pretty remote. It's really like you start to get to the forest because there's like the deforested line that surrounds the town and like the low stone wall that of course would provide no protection in an actual attack, but it just, you know, makes them feel better. So you go on walking past that and you get to the edge of like the forest proper before you find this cottage, which was probably nice before. There's like this cute little vegetable patch outside that looks very lovingly tended. You see like a homemade, you know, scarecrows and all the implements of somebody who is just self-sustainable out here. Some like flower beds and stuff. Everything has been trampled, you can tell, by lots of feet moving through here. So it all looks pretty ruined. The little chairs and like stuff that was maybe outside to sit on the porch have been smashed or thrown to the side. Some of the boards have even been pried up, like people were checking for things in the boards. The door is open. Nobody bothered to close it. After kicking it down, you can see the, you know, the rip where the lock was just obliterated. You step into the house and everything is very much the same. There's like the little living room, dining room, and like a single bedroom where you see, you know, two cots on the side and like the kitchen, and everything has been smashed and thrown to the side. Like people just searched it and didn't bother to clean anything else up. So it's a shit show in here. So finding anything is going to be pretty difficult. So go ahead and make me that investigation, but realize it's going to be tough.
Okay. All right, so that's going to be a 17.
Okay. So what are you looking for specifically?
Any kind of like hidden correspondence that might have been tucked away, any kind of clues as to where the two of them could have gone inside the house. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, at this point, I know what Lorelei is. I know what they all are. So I'm not trying to find like proof of that or anything. Just trying to find where they are.
So, yeah, you look around the house and you search through rubble and looking for any scrap of paper or something, some kind of message. And your search of the house doesn't really yield anything, but you go and you look around like the yard space. And as you're looking back there, again, yeah, the plants are trampled and stuff, but it's not like as messed up as the inside of the house that's not covered in shards and glass and stuff. And so it does catch your attention when you see there's by like a back hedge that has some branches like knocked off the top. There's like a patch of dirt that looks darker. It's been tamped down, but it doesn't quite match the rest of the path. And it's like a small hole, like circular area, like maybe something was buried there.
So she'll go ahead and just find, I'm sure there's like some kind of like trowel or something around from the garden, and dig up that area.
And as you do, there are a couple things that like things your dog might bury in a backyard. Like there's like little toys or like, you know, a broken thing or like a really cool rock or something. A few things in there. And you like keep digging. You're like, this is so weird. What? There's a bone. And then there's also a small metal tube that has all of these little like slidey bits on it. Have you ever seen like a puzzle box?
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like one of those, like a small little canister, maybe like big enough to hold. Yeah, maybe like a message or something. It's very weird, very out of place.
Lou like looks over her shoulders and then looks at the puzzle super excited. And she just like sits down in the dirt and starts playing with this puzzle thing, trying to open it up.
Uh-huh. Yeah. After maybe 5 minutes or so, managed to get this thing open. But it does occur to you that the level of intelligence you've seen in this town so far, this might actually be a really good way to deter other people from opening this. But you do eventually, and the vial pops off, and you can see that there is a little sheet of parchment that has been written like a scrap and shoved inside.
Open it up, and I read it. Hopefully.
As you look at it, you can read what it says, and the script is in very clumsy, hasty writing. It looks like it's in Rook's handwriting, like somebody just like barely cared to learn, but technically did. It says, "Gwen is in danger. I don't have much time, but I'm going after her. Love, Rook."
No direction. Like, she's just, like, sputtering angry over Rook's lack of detail. She's just like, ugh, okay? Fuck you. And she, like, is, like, holding this note, and she, like, goes to put it in her pocket, and it just, like, slips through her fingers.
Oh, no.
Her little ghosty fingers. And it's, like, standing there, like, it's just out there in the open. And she's like, no, this needs to be hidden. And she's like on the ground trying to pick up this piece of paper, blow it away under a bush. And she's just like,
are you making a hard roll? You cannot interact with this object. Your ghost has come up too far to erase one of your marks.
Yep.
Yeah, try as you might, whatever you do, for some reason, this note, maybe it was because it's so important or something, but you cannot manipulate it. It is there on the ground. Anyone who passes by could see it. You can't blow on it. You can't move it. You just lose the ability to interact with it. So erase one of your marks.
There for anyone. Off in the city, you see birds fly up out of the trees as fuck!
An anime scream. And as that happens, that's the transition to Aoife walking down the road. You know, as the birds like go in the back. And Aoife, what are you doing?
Aoife, she is wandering around to a local like butcher shop where she picks up a couple of cuts of like raw steak for however much it will cost. And she would like to entice the dogs around town to come and do her bidding, checking off another box in her tracker to...
Oh, Aoife, that's three.
We're living dangerously.
I love it. I love this for you. Be my villain. I would love some help.
So she wants to, you know, gather up the town dogs because she figures that dogs can generally sit anywhere. People don't often shoo off dogs, and that they can be able to sit listen to people. And if she's got a group of them, she can send them out and make it easier for them to listen and come back and tell them what they've heard. So she gathers up, you know, the old scraggly mutts and everything, and she's like, all right.
Mm-hmm. ones who lay on the porch at the bank, and, you know, the church dog, and, yeah, the one, oh, yeah, yeah, the hunting dogs, and...
Oh, yeah, she gathers them all up, and she's like, she holds up these, you know, parchment-papered-covered packages of meat, and she says, all right, if you go and post up for a bit of time, and you listen to anything involving Lorelai, Rook, or Gwen, and you come back here and tell me, and I'll give you an extra special treat.
And they are, yeah, they're looking at you just like delighted, and they're rolling on their, you know, on their bellies and back, like, you know, like clearly, like, you're the pack leader, and they're like all about it.
Oh yeah.
As they're rolling on your feet. And one of the dogs, actually, when you say this, comes up to you and like sits like a person mm-hmm. up and looks at you like they have something. Like, they have something to say to you.
Oh, yeah, and she'll kneel down right in front of them and listen very intently.
Yeah, you've opened, you know, your will to these dogs, and, like, your natural spirit animals are nothing, like, as you're listening to this dog. And it says, I know. I know. Something.
Oh, tell me. As she begins to open up the package and just the waft of steak rolls out.
Yeah. And his tongue lolls out to the side. Master, a horse, gone. Mad in the night.
And she'll, like, throw a chunk of the beef stew steak.
It's gone in one gulp, and he's like you never gave him meat again. As he's looking at you. Master... upset, but gold, in night, horse gone, when girl gone.
All right, would you take me to your master's house, and I'll give you another couple bits.
Yeah. He says to you and goes trotting off, and all the other dogs are like, like, kind of whining, upset that you're paying attention to the other one.
You'll all get your rest when you've done your work.
Yeah, so they go off back to their posts, you know, sad that you didn't give them any treats. And yeah, so the dog leads you to the town blacksmith. The blacksmith, who's also the farrier, so the person who does horseshoes for town. And you see, so there's a modest stable beside them. And there are a couple horses in there, but clearly, I mean, most of the stalls are empty. And the dog, you know, sits outside like a person again. Mm-hmm. After leading you there, and says, here, master, here. And,
yeah, she'll, of course, like, dip her fingers in and toss another couple chunks on the ground and give him a good scritches around the ears and face and everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and he said, I wait here. I wait. I stay. Stay.
She gives a good nod, and she'll head inside.
Yeah, and you do, and it's immediately the heat of the forge and the metalworking, like, overcomes you as you step in here, and you see a very powerfully built individual working, like, putting away tools and, like, kind of, like, covered in the grime of, like, a day's work and coal. Comes out of the back and steps out and sees you there and says, Monster Hunter, right? Anything I can help you with? Afraid I don't have any silver left.
Well, that's all right. I was wondering, you know, we came from just an hour away down the road, and I recalled the horse that you had. What was its name?
I got a few, but can you describe it for me?
And she looks like, shit.
Shit.
She says, you know, it was a smaller one, an older mare, I think. I heard you had been missing one, and I could have swore I saw out in the woods.
I mean, I am missing a horse. It went missing a couple days ago, but it wasn't a mare. It was a riding horse, black, Midnight. In fact, the fastest horse I got. Damn shame that it was stolen, but, I mean, I guess I can't really say stolen. It was, it's weird. I mean, Midnight's gone. That's for sure. Someone came and took them, but they broke into my shop and left gold on the counter, right? Like, they were paying for them, and, I mean, full market price, you know? So whoever took it, I mean, knew the value of a good horse and had more than a little cash to spend, so, I didn't have much use, I guess, for a riding horse, so, kind of settles it up, I guess.
Isn't that weird? I mean...
But you said you saw Midnight in the woods? Were they okay?
I mean, it seemed to...
He's a good horse.
Indeed, and I thought it was so strange for it to be abandoned, and, you know, such a powerful riding horse. I mean, not many people in this town ride.
No. Midnight, you know, when we used to have post, you know, when there were towns outside of this one, Midnight was the fastest horse around. If you needed to get from A to B in a hurry, Midnight was the horse. And honestly, with all the dangers out there, I haven't had enough time to exercise them. So I hope whoever took that horse, I hope they're having a good life, because I'm certainly set for a while.
And she kind of nods, and she's like, well, I mean, that's good for you at least, but I have to wonder with everything that's been happening in the town. And she kind of leans in with the, you know, the hints of rumors, and perhaps it was someone, I mean, do you think it was someone going after Gwen or Rook, or?
Well, I guess now that you mention it, the timing is a little peculiar, but I mean, if, what, this Rook is supposed to have killed this girl, right? So...
I mean, that's what I can't put together. I mean, they were best friends.
Right, and I mean, Midnight's a riding horse, not a big draft horse, so, you know, couldn't carry two. Probably couldn't handle a person and a body, and it just had to be one rider, but I guess Midnight did go missing the same night, you know, that girl did. Gwen, I mean, if anyone could afford a horse, it's probably the mayor's daughter. And you can see he's kind mm-hmm. of put, this has never occurred to him because he made so much money that he doesn't seem to be sad about it. But he's like, but if it was just the mayor's daughter, I mean, it had to be just one person. So how could Rook have caught up to the, and there's no other horses missing in town.
Yeah, and Aoife taps her chin very thoughtfully, like, yeah, I think you're on to something.
Yeah, that's weird. You know, you should probably tell the mayor that. But not that, pardon me, Lord, he says up to the sky. He's like, not that Hugo. He's a little, you know what I mean?
I agree. We were just stopped into the church to return a relic that's meant to help protect the grounds, and Hugo doesn't seem like how he always has been, you know? She says kind of leadingly.
Yeah, I mean, I am a man of God, don't get me wrong. But lately, it's... Well, honestly, things the way they are with people dying, getting possessed, and demons left and right popping up all over the place. I don't blame Hugo for going a little screwy. You know what I mean? There's been some terrible things that man has had to deal with. Terrible things. And if that did knock a few things loose, only God can judge. That's what I'm saying.
Having seen Sister Dorothea done an evil make a cross to her, of herself and say, as a monster hunter myself, I've seen my fair share of strife. But it's the Lord that works through us that keeps us strong. She like...
Yeah. Yeah, and he nods at you and says, like I said, I'm just God-fearing man, a family man, and all I'm here is to support my own and support my town. So I don't ask too many big questions, but I know you and your folk have done a lot for us, so if there's anything I can do, you just say the word, all right? You know what? I was holding out on you, sorry, but with all that gold coming up, and he reaches under his counter, and he, like, slaps a dagger down, and it glints just, like, in the light of the fire, as you can see it's coated in something highly reflective, and he says, 100% silver. If there's any monster in this world, that'll slice right through him, like yesterday's holiday ham, you know what I mean?
She nods very reverently, accepting this dagger, and sheaves it very carefully, and, you know, she'll even...
You know, actually, I think I got some cold iron back here, too, if you want to be double safe. Let me go. And he starts rooting around. And something in you, a memory of fear, occurs to you.
Just in all parts of her being, it's just suddenly just like this scream. And she says, yeah, you know, you never can be too careful. I'll take that, too.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. They're not in as high demand around, but yeah. And he slaps this other dagger down, and yeah, it's like that, the opposite of the silver, right? It's not reflective. It's just like that dead, flat, matte steel, a little bent out of shape because it's hard to forge anything without fire, right? So it's sitting there on the table, and I think you even feel just a little bit sick looking at it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like her like vision starts to like swirl a little bit, and she sheaves a silver dagger, and then she'll go and she'll reach towards this cold iron weapon, and as she draws closer to it, that just that dizziness, that swirl, and as she grabs it, she stumbles and she looks faint and is leaning into this flaw that she's a fae baby.
And hell is
affected by this.
Yeah. So erase one of these, one of your marks.
Back to two.
And as you do so, you feel like where you have touched it, even though you like just touched the hilt and threw it, like it burns your hand and you are forced to drop it. You're going to take a d4 of damage.
Ooh.
A 4. And as you drop it and look faint, like, there is no way this guy did not see this absolutely happen. And as you kind of fall and there's like the clink, clink, clink of the dagger across the floor, this like amiable guy kind of like looks up to you and makes eye contact. And you see fear fill his gaze as he kind of starts to back away from you in your crouched position on the floor.
Aoife's gonna take out a 15-piece gold bribe and put it on the table and slide it slowly towards him and leave the dagger. For your time.
Okay, door's that way.
Yeah, she'll back out. Still a little woozy.
So you back out into the streets and it's just... yeah, finally, when you can't see the thing anymore, like, you snap back to yourself and you're like, now would be a good time to go.
Very quickly, heading back.
Speaking of, so I think Lou is, like, heading back into town, like, uh-oh, we left this message. That's proof that Rook is involved. And then you're like, Aoife, uh-oh, left this proof that I'm a monster. And then Tony, here we are in this brewing bar fight. What is your next move, Tony? You are in a very precarious situation. What you do next will matter greatly.
Well, Tony, like, slaps her thighs after chugging her drink and is like, well, I've got some business to attend to. I've been tasked by the church to find some cold, hard evidence to prove Lorelai's witchy behavior. Because, you know, there are still some people who are left with some questions, and what better way to shut those people up than with some irrefutable evidence, and then maybe even bring some new people to the church. So I'm gonna go and look for that. If anyone has any suggestions where to go, I'm all ears.
There's a cry that comes from somewhere you can't really see. It's like, up your own ass! And like people in the crowd like start looking, and then like there's like a laugh, and you're like, and people's like, yeah, like from the outside. No clever comeback. But
who fucking said that? Who said that? You want to have a talk?
Because you were intimidating earlier. They all go very quiet.
Uh-huh. All right, well, good night.
Are you backing up out of here?
Mm-hmm.
Right, you do. They let you go. So, yeah, you all kind of step out on the street. It's not a very big town, so I think you all kind of intersect in the middle here. And as you all come back together, Aoife, there are a couple of dogs that are, like, whipping around the corner. And those dogs, not the same ones as before. And so you all, like, meet up in the street And I guess probably Tony and Eva, at the very least, are looking a little nervous. I don't know. Lou, how are you doing? You did just leave evidence laying out. Are you all looking pretty?
Of course. I did something that wasn't perfect. Lou is horrified. This is something that I would kill one of my underlings for back at home.
Whoa, intense. Okay, so the dogs very quickly then will communicate. One says, a horse, a black horse, rode out of town in the middle of the night 2 nights ago. There was a girl in fancy clothes who smelled good on the horse. And she was riding north towards the castle.
Beautiful. All right, yeah, she'll dole out the rest of the steak for all of them and feed them all.
Yeah. And then another dog, the other one, tells you someone broke into the chapel and the priest thought it was secret, but they snuck out and they didn't smell like wine, like the usual people who break in. They smelled like paper, like they took paper, very old paper from the church.
Interesting.
They also said the person smelled nice.
They smell it all. They smell nice.
That person who smelled nice apparently took something paper from the church, and the person who smelled nice also rode out on a black horse. It's probably safe to assume Rook was not the person who smelled nice.
Fresh as a flower, that one.
Wait!
For real.
So what's the plan? Yeah, you all have a moment here to compare notes.
My notes are, there's a lot of bigots here, and we need to get the fuck out.
Do we recall, like, in our, like, knowledge from our bodies that we've inhabited, what, like, this castle is and where this castle is that they referred to?
Castle. The word castle comes out of the dogs, and you're like, castle. Yeah, that seems familiar. And for some reason, Castle Dread comes to all of you. You haven't pissed off Vittoria, and she did say, if there are questions you have, or anybody gives you shit, to come to her. So you do have a moment here if you want to ask some questions about that. But I will say your time in town is very limited before a gossip starts.
Soon there will be 4 pyres in the town square.
Right, like the blacksmith isn't running out right this second to tell people because you just left his shop, but you got like an hour window here probably in town.
So do we have any other questions for her other than what's up with Castle Dread? How to get there?
I think that's probably it.
We like are readying ourselves to leave town, but we swing back by the town center to go meet up with Vittoria and kind of Lou will approach and put a soft hand on her shoulder and be like, we have to head out. I don't think we've done the best of jobs with instilling positivity with everybody, but...
You see what I'm up against, then.
You should move, but that's for future Vittoria.
There's nowhere else to go.
Oh, God. The question is, we did find some good leads to try to find your daughter. Have you heard of Castle Dread?
Of course. You haven't?
I've heard of, but I don't know too many details about it.
Really more legend than anything material we've ever heard.
Castle Dread is what they call the ruined castle. It's about a day's ride north of here. The road out of town to the north still leads there, for the most part, before the forest is overgrown and such, but I mean, it's been abandoned, well, at least by people, for quite a long time, but that's where the champion disappeared. Surely you know the legends.
Do I know the legends?
Nope. You do recall that in the first entry in the book, in that weird flashback, there was something mentioned about a champion. That raven-haired woman said something about a champion going missing and the land being in trouble ever since then. They say it's haunted. Maybe even the source of all the monsters. And if a hero as brave as the champion never came out, I hope that is not where my daughter has gone.
Well, the champion didn't have three other heroes at his back. So.
Her back. The champion's name was Penny. But you're right. She was alone. And so is my daughter.
Not for long if we can help it. So, I think that we'd better make our way as quickly as possible. Is there any way that you can use any kind of connection to give us transportation so we can make as much haste as possible?
I know there are a couple of horses in town. Here, if you speak to the farrier, perhaps he can help you. And she just offers you her money pouch. She just takes it off of her own belt. She's like, this is all I have.
We will make good use of it.
Please, even if you find her body, please bring it back to me. I would hate for her to become one of those things.
Of course. Gals, let's ride, I guess. Lou just kind of points in a direction, trying to, like, get an idea of where the farrier is.
Oh, Aoife knows.
Yeah.
Aoife should not go inside.
Oh, I know the way, but y'all should probably handle that. I'll wait outside.
You can go in between Tony and Lou. Managed to get some horses from this very frightened individual. He's just a little off the whole time, but it's fine. You make the transactions and you get your horses. They're not amazing. It's a small town. There's not a lot of horses available, but you get the best they have. And you head off from this town with all its troubles, heading towards this haunted castle where apparently this champion, Penny, was lost, as you recall, said in the poem, lost to the Lady of Shadow a long time ago. And that's where we're going to end the episode for today.
Ah!
Oh, yay! My God.
Wait, Zora! Oh, there's a cat baby.
We had to have our familiar come by to say, hey, screw you people who don't like witches. I'm a cat. Meow.
And she had a cat. Yes. That was hilarious.
Yeah. She had cats. Yeah. She had multiple cats. Oh. How dare she? Yeah. We are in medieval society, so ain't that fun. ain't it nice to not be there in most normal D&D? Oh, boy. But thank you all so much for stopping by, for telling the story, listening to our supernatural spinoff version. I've loved it. I'm feeling great about it. I hope you all are too. I think
this has been super fun.
I was ready to get in a fucking bar fight with that asshole.
Rough and tumble Tony.
I wish he would have spoken up.
You probably could have fought 50 commoners and lived in like one, but a lot of ill will. Like murder 50 people in a town of like 500.
I wouldn't miss them.
No, I think a lot of people wouldn't, but oh boy. Oh no. A lot of people would be even angrier. But anyway, thank you all so much for stopping by. If you enjoy the show, please, please do. If you're watching on Twitch, subscribe, like, do the thing, donate your bits. We really appreciate it. And if you are watching on YouTube, subscribe, like, leave a comment, tell everyone to come and see it, like, you know, save the channel. It's really great and helps our metrics a lot. If you're listening on podcasts, do it, do the thing, leave a rating and review. If you're on Spotify, you can just give us 5 stars. You don't even have to leave a review. In fact, you can't. You can just click one button with your fingy to make our lives better, which is like the lowest bar to excellence ever. So please do it. And if you like the show, please do consider, take just a second to realize, like, we make no money off of the show other than what folks donate to us on Patreon. So if you think this content, if you have joined it for even an hour, donating $1 to represent an hour of enjoyment is amazing. Less than the cost of a movie or anything on pay-per-view. So, you know, like, maybe go over to our Patreon and support us. Patreon is an awesome site where you can donate monthly or make a one-time donation to support us. Put all that money right back into making the show better, upgrading our equipment, doing things like making the Venture Maze campaign guide and all kinds of cool stuff. So please, please do go donate. Do it. And speaking of the Patreon I mentioned earlier, we always like to take some time at the end of our episodes to thank folks at our two highest donor tiers, so our Ferris Drinking Mate tier and our Arnie's Cohorts tier. So starting off with Arnie's Cohorts, that's a hard word to say. I want to say thank you so much to Cody Becker at Cody Rolls 4 on Twitter.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you, Curry.
Thank you, Muffin at the one on Drury Lane on Twitter.
Thank you so much, Nissa McKinnon.
Thank you, Richie113 from our Discord.
And in our Ferris Drinking Mate tier, thanks, Chris.
You're the best, Markali.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you, Fable.
And thank you, as always, to Tony.
Tony!
Okay, and Nassim wanted to talk about something very important right now.
Yes, thank you. This current moment in time, there have been a series of protests in Iran, my family's homeland, our motherland, and it's all the catalyst of this young Kurdish woman's death. Hopefully you've heard about it by now. If not, I encourage you to gain a little bit of backstory, a little context of what led the people to this moment. About 19 out of the 30 to 31 provinces in Iran have protests spreading across the nation, and they are facing a media blackout. They don't have internet access. They can't share what they're experiencing in this country right now. And it's been going on for about a week so far. It's heartbreaking. It's disgusting, and it fills me with a lot of rage that I'm stuck here and watching from the sidelines when I can't get very much information. A lot of people are feeling the same way. It's a lot of frustration, and it's 40 years in the making. And I just want to say, like, our country faced something really similar recently. It's a different dressings, but they're fighting the same fight. And people have showed up for these fights in the past with BLM, with Me Too, with Ukraine, with so many things. And they literally are getting their voices shut down right now. And without us amplifying their voices, if you hear anything from Iranian creators, people passing those messages on, I encourage you to share them and tell people about it. Don't let their voices be shut down, shut off, because it's scary when you don't know what's happening in an entire country for this long. And the last time they did this, they got away with a lot of horrific, violent crimes that nobody was held accountable for. So we can't let that happen again, ever. And this feels like the brink of the end of 40 years of an oppressive regime. And we need to make sure that keeps going. That's all I can say.
And also look in the chat. We'll have some resources, some links in there for you all to look at as well, so you can be more informed. Well, thank you all for joining us for this very special episode. I can't wait to see what happens next when we get to this spooky haunted castle. Will our heroes turn into monsters? Will one of them become a villain and help me slay everyone else? Boy, I hope so. Tune in next time to find out. And until then, everybody.
Wait, outros.
Oh, God, hey, I've been your Dungeon Master, your Orchestrator of Evil, Celeste Conowidge.
Hi, I'm Katie. I've been playing Luverius Sath, your paranormal pal.
I'm Nassim, and I was your half-orc fighter, very confrontational fighter, Tony Silvertail.
And I'm Sage, and I have been your blushing bard, Aoife Flannery.
Okay, we did it. We did a good. So until next time, everybody.
Venture away!